mighty phantoms of the evening sky. To whom do these celestial steeds belong? When you appear to us like gods on high, what brings you here to mystify?
Kate Valentine's UFO show. Watching strange visitors that come and go. The UFO show with Kate Valentine. We're gonna travel through space and rocket through time. Exploring what is possible, examine what is logical. Could we really be here all alone? From the subatomic universe to black holes in space, with a very open attitude and low absolute magnitude.
UFO show in science.
And welcome to the first Kate Valentine UFO show of 2012, right here on 1160 WVNJ. Today we're going to be reaching out halfway around the world to Australia, where Andrew Arnold, the founder of the Victorian UFO Action, is going to be on the phone to tell us of all the goings-on down under and to help us bring in the new year. So for Andrew, we're going to give him a little bit of time to get on the show because, interestingly enough, it's 5 in the morning down under, and it's also the next day, Friday here, Saturday at 5 in the morning down there, which always is interesting. Just to give you a little bit of background, Andrew got interested in ufology, and he'll tell us how in a few minutes, and then went on into the whole field of ufology full force, started an organization, a website, outreach to other groups. And I think it's especially important to have him on the show because sometimes we tend to feel that UFOs are only here in our own backyard, when in reality, they're all over the world. For example, we've had Farah Yurdizu on just recently, and she was telling us about the sightings in Turkey. We've also had Malcolm Robinson from Scotland, who has been very active over there, and indeed, most of the British Isles seem to be a true magnet for these UFOs. I mean, just Rendlesham Forest immediately comes to mind. The other thing, occasionally with UFOs, you'll get conspiracy theories wrapping into the field as well. And in this country, we have Area 51. And in Australia, they have Pine Gap. Both of these are really, I guess, fascinating because they've been held in such secrecy. And, you know, when things are secret, you wonder what really is going on there. Although most of the feeling with Area 51 now is that it is indeed a secret military installation. And because of the worldwide attention and worldwide renown of Area 51, it probably is just military, and anything that was involved with extraterrestrials has long since been moved out of there. And then rumor had it that it went to Dulce, New Mexico, but that also got a certain amount of fame, and I think it's been moved out of there since then. Andrew had also sent me a very interesting email, and I'd read it as well, about NASA's recent public interest in the moon. The dual orbiters that are there that are checking the gravitational fields of the moon, and one of our past guest had mentioned that they felt the moon was actually hollow in an artificial satellite, as is they also felt that Phobos, one of the moons of Mars, was also an artificial satellite. So it'll be interesting to see what exactly is released and what the findings are. And all these things are pretty fascinating, and interestingly enough, we'd love to get the view of our friends in Australia. So, Andrew, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for being here today. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, Kate. How are you?
Oh, very well, too. Thank you. I had mentioned earlier to our listeners that you were going to tell us how you got interested in ufology.
Yeah, I was... As I said to you the other day, it started from a rather early age, actually. Mm-hmm. I was only young, probably about 14 or 15 when I first saw my first UFO.
Where was that? What did that look like?
Okay. That was like a red triangle in the sky at the time. I was outside with a friend. It was late at night, and it was a hot summer's night, actually, and we were just sitting outside listening to some music, and all of a sudden this big red triangle came over the top and just flew straight past us, and we just couldn't believe it. So that was the first time I'd ever seen anything like a UFO, but I guess that's where it all started from.
Now, you were a young fella. What did your family say when you said this to them? Was there any reaction from them?
Well, I guess Mum and Dad really didn't take a lot of notice of it. They didn't sort of see it, so they didn't really think much of it, to be honest.
And then, as an adult, when did you really get into this? And, you know, because you've really got into it full force now. You've developed organizations, websites. What sort of brought that out? A lot of us have had sightings, but many people don't go into the extent that you have, developing organizations and so on.
Yes, well, I guess it's got a lot to do with, I suppose, my age and so forth, and the situation of having the ability, and the thing is, I'm able to do that sort of thing these days. Whereas when you're younger, you don't sort of have a lot of opportunities to do those sorts of things.
Yeah, but there wasn't like a second sighting that triggered it all off.
Yes, that's right. I've had quite a few sightings over the years. The other sighting that I had was four orbs that I saw fly across the sky, which the whole family saw, to be honest.
Yeah. It seems like, again, as I had mentioned earlier, a lot of times, we here in the States tend to concentrate on sightings in the States. And I think it's a great idea that we start to form this internet of people who are interested all around the world to sort of get these sightings maybe in one website.
Yes, that's right, yeah.
And, certainly in this country we've had some efforts toward it. Filer's Files come to mind right away. And, the National UFO Reporting Center is pretty good, too. Is there a centralized place in Australia, or is it based, or are you it?
There is one organization in Australia that controls the sightings of UFOs and things. Sorry about that.
Oh, no problem.
There is an organisation in Australia called AUFORM, which is the biggest organisation in Australia for UFOs. They have a representative in each state of Australia that takes phone calls and things on sightings around Australia. They're probably the biggest organisation. There used to be another group called VUFORCE, which was run out of Victoria in Australia, which was quite a large organisation that started back in the late 50s. But they've sort of disbanded now, and they're not around. And so that left Victoria, with nobody at all to, have a central point for reporting UFOs and. And I guess that's where our organisation came in, because probably for the last 5-6 years we've had nobody in Victoria who's had any kind of an organisation that we could go to for sightings and things like that. So I guess that's where our organisation originally was born from, because we needed to have something like that. And I guess that's the sort of thing that came about with me as far as creating the website, and as far as having a two-prong approach, I suppose, we decided we'd have a YouTube show as well. So we know that, from Australia's point of view, and when you look across to America, in America you've got quite a different varieties of ways of finding out information on UFOs. One would be your show, for example. There's a lot of radio shows that look after the UFO public, I guess, out there. But as far as having something to actually watch, there was nothing. So we decided we'd create our own. So that's how we came up with Euphonaut Australia. And so we do a YouTube-style TV show, and we try to put that out every 2 or 3 months on the internet. And so that sort of complements alongside our website, which has a lot of other valuable information and so forth.
Wow, that's interesting. I think you may be one of the few people actually doing that as an organization. I know some private people do it, but they do it sort of hit and miss if they've seen an object or so on. But congratulations, that is a good thought. This is Kate Valentine. I'm speaking to Andrew Arnold. He is the founder of the Australian group Victorian UFO Action. We're on 1160 WVNJ. You can join this conversation right now by putting your thoughts, your comments on our website, AtlanticCoastUFOs.com. And after the show, you can find out more about our colleagues in Australia on their website, VUFOA.com. And we'll be right back after a short break. Hope to hear from you then.
If you missed part of today's program or you'd like to hear it again, be sure to subscribe to the Kate Valentine UFO Show podcast. Go to Kate's website, AtlanticCoastUFOs.com, and sign up by entering your email address on the homepage. Every week, the show will be delivered right to you, so you'll never miss another intriguing, thought-provoking interview with the top names in the UFO field. Sign up today for the Kate Valentine UFO Show podcast at AtlanticCoastUFOs.com.
Hi, welcome back to the Kate Valentine UFO Show here with you at 1160 WVNJ. I'm delighted to welcome as our guest today Mr. Andrew Arnold. He is the founder of the Australian group Victorian UFO Action. You can find out more about his vibrant group by going to their website, VUFOA.com. Or if you have questions for Andrew, you can post them right now on our website, AtlanticCoastUFOs.com. And I'd like to thank Andrew again because he is speaking to us from Australia. For him, it is Saturday morning, 5 a.m., and I give you credit for being up and about at that time, Andrew. Congratulations.
Thanks, Kate. No problem at all.
Okay.
It's all for the cause.
I'm sorry?
I said it's all for the cause.
Oh, okay. Yeah, well, I'll tell you, you guys have been having some interesting things down there. You have some really interesting cases. I don't know if many people here are aware of the Fred Valentich story, but that was probably one of the few times that there actually was an injury related to UFOs.
Yeah, the Fred Valentich case is probably one of Australia's biggest cases involving a UFO. Fred was a 20-year-old pilot who decided he was going to go on a short flight across to a small island called King Island to pick up some crayfish, and then he was going to head straight back to the airport. But the thing was, the flight was only an hour and 10 minutes all up, and really, it shouldn't have been a big deal. It was a lovely day. It was late in the day, just before sunset, and he took off from a local airport just outside of Melbourne in his Cessna, which was a 182. It was a long-range Cessna, which meant that the distance that he was travelling was rather short compared to how far it could go. He had actually filled the tanks to capacity, so he had full fuel on board, so there was not to be any issues there. He took off about 10 past 6, sorry, he filled up his plane about 10 past 6 and then took off about 6:19 in the afternoon. About 6:21 he reported through his flight details to Melbourne Airport, which is the main airport in Victoria. He started travelling out across across Bass Strait, which is a body of water between, how do I put this, where you've got Melbourne and then you've got Tasmania, which is further down from Melbourne, further south. So you've got King Island situated somewhere in between that, I guess, is probably the best way to explain it. It was nearly sunset, and he was heading for a part of the coast which is called Cape Otway, There's a big lighthouse there. So the idea is once you get to this particular lighthouse and you can see it, or because a lot of it's visual, he would then bank round to the left and head straight forward to King Island. Point was, once he had travelled to that particular spot and started head back out to sea towards King Island, he was travelling at around about 4,500 feet. And that's at that point in time when he reported seeing an object in the sky, which was a long, elongated sort of shape, so a little bit like a balloon type of thing, not a round disc or anything, but a long balloon shaped thing. But he said it was made of appeared to be made of metal and had green lights on it. He also had stated that it wasn't an aircraft. So at that point in time, it was, I think it was about 7:28. He didn't arrive, and that was about the time he was supposed to arrive out at King Island, but he didn't arrive. But he'd reported all this to Steve Robey, which was the air traffic controller in Melbourne. He had roughly about a 7-minute conversation with Steve about what he was seeing, that the thing had flown over him, around him. It was about 1,000 foot above him. And then all of a sudden, there was no more communication between the two. There was a lot of strange noises on the radio, like scraping of metal noises. And then that was it, and he was gone. So they spent 2 weeks with the air services people trying to track him down, find out where he'd gone down in the water. But unfortunately, there was no oil slicks and nothing washed up onto the beach. There was absolutely nothing. There was no metal or anything or any scrap metal anywhere. So, and some of the people that knew Fred had travelled down there to scour the beaches. They did that for months on end, I believe, and they found nothing of the guy. There was no record of him crashing into the ocean at all.
So he just disappeared.
Literally disappeared off the planet.
Wow, that's interesting. And it is. It's like it's a sort of a singular story. You don't hear that often. I mean, certainly there was the fella, I'm sorry, his name escapes me at the time, but, you know, the Navy pilot from this country. But I think that's about it. I can't think of any other stories. That was a particularly, how would you say, scary, I guess, almost story, because he was in constant contact. They heard those peculiar noises, and that was it. And I don't think it was a plane breaking up. I think they would have found pieces or something.
Well, this is right. And there's a lot of strange things about this particular case that we've been investigating to try and get to the bottom of. One of the, just to give you a couple of the strange things, he had a girlfriend, and she always travelled with him. In just about every single occasion, she travelled with him on the plane,
mm-hmm.
but not on this flight. For some reason, she didn't go on this flight.
Wow.
So that was one thing. The other thing, too, is, and this is the most strangest, is that the air traffic control tapes from, you know, the recording between the air services guy and also, which is Steve Robey, and between him and Frederick Valentich, those tapes, they got used again, so they just got wiped over, even though this was like, you know, weeks and months after the event. These tapes weren't put aside, they were reused. So that was a bit of an odd one. And the other thing, too, is that before they were, taped over, that there was three people involved, and I really wouldn't like to say who they are, but I can tell you one of them, that was Frederick's father. They were given copies of these particular tapes, and I believe this would have been back on the old cassette days when they used to have cassettes. So But these copies that what they were given, they were allowed to listen to the tapes, and then they were told, this is the strange part, Kate, what they were told at that point in time was that you can have the tapes, you can take them away, but you must not use them, let anybody listen to them, or use them for any commercial purpose of any description, at least for the next 70 years. And they were made to sign a disclosure act against it. Now, that seems a little bit sort of over the top to me and to quite a few other people here. Why would they need to do that? I mean, it doesn't make a lot of sense, but that's just two scenarios. And one of the other ones was, during the night of the event, a chap by the name of Roy Manifold was down on holidays, and he was down near Kaypot Way at the time with his family, camping down there. And he was a bit of a photographer. He liked to take photos of the sunset and so forth. And so he set his camera up and took a few photos and one thing or another, didn't think much of it. Next morning he gets up, he heard the plane go over, by the way. The next morning he gets up, goes outside and sees all these planes and boats and everything floating around. And that's the point when he found out that Fred had disappeared, so he didn't realise until the following day. And some months later he had these films developed, and he found out that there was something on one of the films, an odd looking shape in the sky. And he didn't know what it was, but he thought maybe there's something wrong with the film, so he sent it off to, I'm not sure if it was Kodak or one of those people that make films, but he sent it off to them over in the States, and they checked it all out, and they came back and said, well, there's nothing wrong with the film. Whatever's in that photo is in that photo. So, so he'd taken a photo of what appeared to be some sort of craft in the sky. And he kept the negative, and he'd actually done quite a few interviews with different people, but he kept the original negative, and he locked it up in a safety deposit box with his bank. Of course, years go by, and one thing or another, so he's gone back to the bank one day to try and pull it out, and they've said, oh, I'm sorry, we've lost it.
Oh.
Now, you'd have to ask yourself, if you're putting something like that in a bank in a safety deposit box, how did they lose it? But that was the answer that he was given. We did an interview with Roy during the episode that we put out, and we sat down with him and his wife, and that's what happened. So I've heard it from the horse's mouth to say, you know, the tip has now gone missing. So we scoured around the internet, found out where the best pictures were that we could get our hands onto, speaking to different people, and were able to retain some pictures for him. But the original negative is now gone.
Huh. So somebody's sitting on top of all this, and this is the question I constantly have here. Who is... who's directing these efforts to keep this secret? Where are they coming from? How are they so aware of things? Like, how would they know that a man on holiday on a beach taking a picture would have happened to take a picture of this craft? And how would they know to, compromise a bank executive to open a safety deposit box to get this piece of film out? And I do believe it happened. I'm not questioning the man's integrity. But how does all this happen? Who has this kind of power?
I know, exactly. And you know, it's not an uncommon thing, is it? I mean, we hear about it happening.
No, not at all.
All the time. There was another interesting case, which you probably would have heard of this one too, which was the Westall 66 case. And there was a movie made recently, or a documentary made recently, which was shown on the Sci-Fi Channel.
Well, I'll tell you, Andrew, we're going to have to take a quick break, so hold that thought till after the break, if you don't mind. Thank you. This is Kate Valentine. I'm speaking to Andrew Arnold. He is the founder of the Australian Victorian UFO Action Group. We are on 1160 WVNJ. We'd love you to join our conversation, and you can do that right now by putting your thoughts, your comments on our website, AtlanticCoastUFOs.com. After the show, you can find out much more about our colleagues in Australia on their website, theufoa.com, or you go to our facebook.com/KVUFO show. We'll be right back after a short break. right, welcome back to the Kate Valentine UFO Show on 1160 WVNJ. Today, it's our pleasure to welcome as a guest Mr. Andrew Arnold. He is the founder of the Australian group Victorian UFO Action. You can find out more about this vibrant Australian UFO group by going to their website, theufoa.com. If you have questions for Andrew, post them right now on our website, AtlanticCoastUFOs.com. Andrew, just before we get to the West Falls film, we had two comments come in. The first one was from Dave. He was wondering if the Australian government has been as secretive and evasive as the United States government when it comes to matters of UFOs and ETs.
yes, definitely. No question about
I'll
that.
I'll take that as a yes, right?
We put in freedom of information requests all the time, and quite often we get answers back. I did just the other day to say that the document that I was after, which is in our national archives, will have to be reviewed for security purposes before they decide they're going to let us have it. So. That's a perfect example of that sort of thing, I guess, Kate.
Now, well, welcome to the club. The other one we had was a really good comment from Earl, too. He said he would be informative if you could expound a bit on Pine Gap. I think our audience would be interested in hearing about that. We're all sort of aware of Area 51 here, but Pine Gap is a little bit out of our ordinary conversations here.
Yep, no, that's fine. Pine Gap is an interesting situation. Pine Gap was created or built as a joint venture between the government and the Australian government in 1960. It was originally for purposes to be used by the CIA for spying, I guess. It has the ability to connect different satellites around the world and provide information straight back to the US in regards to whatever they're looking for. It was one of the first points that was used during the 1967 when it was created. It was probably only a very small base at the point in time, but like Area 51 that is now increased, it does have a double fence around it, which is both electrified to keep people out. It works the same as what you would with Area 51. It's got the the camel dudes outside in their trucks waiting for you to turn up so they can arrest you. There are signs all the way around the entire establishment saying force will be used, and you know that you could be endangering your life if you cross the line. So there's a lot of similarities between Area 51 here. Going to the extreme, they say that there's anywhere between 500 to 900 people at any given time, with the majority being Americans, but some being Australian. The most is a good one, I don't know what it is up on the, if anybody's got a map of it, if you look up on the left at the very top, which is Western Australia, there to the centre of Australia and just go slightly north. That's pretty much where Pine Gap is. They say that there is a tunnel that runs all the way through to Pine Gap where nuclear submarines spin and get refueled. So Pine Gap is supposedly 9 levels down, and they reckon that, that they have aliens there. So, you know, I mean, these things are hard to prove, and you only have certain amounts of information that are given to you. But one of the interesting things with that particular base is that back in 1972, the Whitlam government was facing a barrage of attacks from the opposition political party at the time in all sorts of ways as far as the budget goes and so forth. And without getting too into it, Kate, because it would take hours to go through it, the government of the time, the Whitlam government, was basically sacked from office, done via the Queen of England, who has rights to be able to do that here at that particular point in time. And the reasons given was that money was blocked from the Whitlam government to be able to govern the country from the opposition, which is another thing that they can do. But the interesting point is that a lot of it comes about around about the same time that the CIA fits in, and some people were murdered at the time. So there's a whole write-up on it. If you want to check this out, you can find plenty of websites on Pine Gap, and we'll give you that information. But generally speaking, it's very much like Area 51. They do a lot of testing of different equipment and things there. Probably the big difference is that it's not an Air Force base that's been designed for testing new aircraft and so forth. But having said that, plenty of people have seen plenty of UFOs, and they've all been above that particular site. So one of the interesting things that I did find out about was that there is a blue beam of light that tends to appear now and again that comes straight from Pine Gap out of the ground into the sky. What it's for, we don't know, but there's just another interesting thing that happens at Pine Gap.
Wow, and it's interesting that both of these facilities are located so far away from any real areas that are inhabited. I mean, they're way out in the middle of nowhere.
They do that on purpose, Kate, because they don't want people to know.
Yeah, I guess so. And again, you know, I hope, you know, it would be nice to know what UFOs are, but I think as time goes on, it would be even more interesting to know what or who they are. You know, it's really starting to get to be a little bit. I'm wondering if a lot of these secrets with the internet and with, you know, all of this information that's just starting to float around and that the public does have access to much more readily than, say, the old days of libraries and books and so on. I'm wondering if some of it isn't going to start to break loose fairly soon.
Well, you know, I guess at some point in time something's going to crack and there's going to be some information that'll get leaked somewhere. So you never know. You never know what's going to come from the other side. Black budgets and things like that, there's plenty of them. We know there's a government within the government. Well, guess what? That happens here in Australia as well. We have all the same similar problems that you guys have in the States. But yeah, so you never really know what we're up for, but let's hopefully see that 2012 is more of a year of disclosure than anything else. I don't think you're ever going to get the government of the day, be American government, Australian or British or anybody. I don't think you can anybody turn around and say, I'm sorry, but there's UFOs here and there's nothing we can do about it, because, you know, that's not what people want to hear, that they can't do anything about it. And also the government doesn't want to appear that they're basically useless in defending our nation, so or our world, I should say. But so I don't think it's going to come from them. I think if anything, if there's any disclosure, it will come from the people that are coming here from other planets. Let's just hope in the next 12 months that something happens on that, because I think for everybody it would be a hell of a good idea, because, you know, we're in a bit of a mess down here these days. You know, you look across the world and you see all the problems with the monetary systems, and you guys in the States are going through your own problems at the moment with unemployment, one thing and another. So let's hope that maybe they're a little bit wiser than what we are, and they can come down and help us out a little bit, stop all these wars and so forth.
Well, that would be a nice thing, certainly. That would be good. But, you know, as one of our guests pointed out, they're not the one keeping the secret. They're flying around right in your face. They're, you know, they're here, they land, they take people up, they bring people back. You know, it's not as if they're trying to keep it quiet at all. So I guess you're right. I think it probably is a government effort to keep it quiet, because they don't want to admit that they can't control it. You know, so yeah, it seems like that's it.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, but anyway, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Little
bit back to what we were talking about before with the history of our group. We've only been going since the mid 2010, and yet to date we've got over 75 members, and we've had over 25,000 hits on our website, so there's a lot of interest out there within our country about what's happening in regards to UFOs and alien abduction and so forth. So We've actually got I've got a team of 7 people or 8 people that we work with here in Victoria, and they're quite credible people. You know, we've got a pilot on board. We've got the Victorian director of AUFON, which is Australian UFO Research Network, which is the main group in Australia. He's on board. We've got another chap by the name of Keith Basterfield. He works out of South Australia. He's probably one of Australia's most important people in our field, because he's an historian for and researcher for UFOs. He's been around a long time, written a lot of articles and a lot of books. So he's on board. Then we've got the technical side of things. We've got a chap by the name of Andy Davis, who works out of the UK for us. He does a lot of the video presentation work. And John Warner, he does a lot of CGI for us. And this is the interesting thing I was going to mention before, Kate, is that we've had to split the Fred Valentich case into 2 different episodes. And the reason we've had to do that is because there is so much to investigate. And so the next episode, hopefully out in February on UFONAUT Australia, will have a full-blown CGI movie of the actual event. So we've been working on that for quite some months now. It's never been tackled before, because this particular movie will be as true as we can make it to the event, right down to the colour of the aeroplane, the whole thing. So we're trying to keep it as original as the actual event. So we haven't just, you know, thrown any old aeroplane in there. We've actually gone out and found out what the colour of the plane was, where the stripes were, what he looked like, and the whole bit. So we've really tried to hone in on the authenticity of the whole thing. So, and like I said before, we've got a pilot by the name of Rick Wilson on board. He actually works at Moorabbin Airport, which is the airport that Fred left from. He actually knew Fred. So, you know, it's been a big story, and we've worked really hard at this one. We've just recently put out episode 9, which is has the first half of that particular event on it. Episode 10 out hopefully in February. That's the Fred Valentich case.
I'll tell you, that's something to look forward to, and I really congratulate you on all the work you've been doing. It's good to know that we have friends in the UFO network down there in Australia. It seems like it's a good thing to know. It really is. This is Kate Valentine, and I'm speaking to Andrew Arnold. He is the founder of the Australian group Victorian UFO Action. We're on 1160 WVNJ. We'd like to know what you think about all this. Post your comments at AtlanticCoastUFOs.com. After the show, you can find out more about our colleagues in Australia on their website, theufoa.com, or, as Andrew has just said, UFONauts with their videos. It sounds very intriguing. We'll be right back after a short break. We'll hope to hear from you then. Hi, welcome back to the Kate Valentine UFO Show on 1160 WVNJ. We're very happy today to have as our guest Mr. Andrew Arnold. He is the founder of the Australian group Victorian UFO Action. You can find out more about this really interesting group by going to their website, theufoa.com. If you have questions for Andrew, you can post them right now on our website, AtlanticCoastUFOs.com, or you can always go to our Facebook.com/KVUFO Show. Andrew, I'll tell you, you've been so interesting. I think we forgot that before the last break, we were supposed to go over Westfall's movie, was it? That's coming up?
The Westall UFO case, which happened back on the 6th of April 1966. A couple of years ago, there was a movie released, or a documentary released, produced by Rosie Jones and presented by Shane Ryan. It was released and shown on the Sci-Fi Network over in the States a couple of years ago. And it's been re-shown, as I believe, on there. So I'm not sure if anybody watches the sci-fi show, but they'll be able to pick that show up from there from time to time. it was quite an interesting situation held at a local school not too far from where I live. At about 11 o'clock in the morning, there was 200 students and several teachers had witnessed two UFOs came down into the school. Apparently one of the UFOs was larger than the other, but there's a bit of conjecture as to that particular size of UFOs, what they were. Some people say they were the same size, but anyway, irrelevant. Point was that there was two UFOs that landed in the rear of the school in the schoolyard. Shortly after, a teacher by the name of Mr. Greenwood came out of his classroom to see what all the commotion was. And he also saw these particular two UFOs land into the back end of the school, out where they would play football and so forth. Some of the children also ran outside to have a look once they'd seen what was going on. And then what happened was that these two craft, once the people had been out looking at it, had lifted back off the ground and gone up into the sky, at which point they then moved across about 700 metres across to another point of land, which was called the Grange. The Grange is a strange park which has long, tall, skinny trees with not a lot of branches. They're long, tall and skinny with a lot of leaves at the top. Now, these two craft flew across to there. One hovered inside two or three of those trees like a hologram. The other particular craft went to the back of the park and dropped and landed somewhere at the back of the park. Well, guess what? The children are very quickly ran across to this particular park to have a look to see what was going on. And in this particular case, two or three other children had run after the one at the back of the park to have a look at it. They had only just barely got there when both of these crafts then lifted off and then started to move across the sky and finally disappeared. Now, the strange thing is about this particular case is you've got over 200 students who have seen this event, so it's not like somebody's just mistaken something in the sky. There was five light aircraft from Moorabbin Airport, which once again is not too far from where this school is, that flew around these two particular craft trying to see what was going on. The weird part about that is that no one's ever been able to track down who flew those planes. There doesn't appear to be any record of them from the airport. Very odd, very strange. I think they did track down one person at one point in time, but they passed away, so there was no way to make any connection. But the funny thing is that there doesn't seem to be any record of those planes being in that vicinity at the time. And so these two particular craft then lifted off and took off. And, of course, the kids were all panicking, one thing and another, thought it was the end of the world. Now, the weird part about it is within 15 minutes of that event happening, there was some men that had arrived and they appeared to be wearing what looked like Air Force uniforms. They were light blue uniforms, which was typical of the uniforms from the day of the Air Force uniforms. And they came in trucks. There was four or five big trucks, army trucks, that turned up as well with army personnel, about 20 guys. They cordoned off the whole area. And at that point in time, they brought in some guys that looked like they'd taken soil samples. And then also, they flame-throwed the whole area. So they burnt the entire area, even though there was markings on the ground that you could see circular motions of where these particular craft had come down. There was markings. And so all this all happened like within the first 15 to half an hour sort of time frame where all this stuff had then vanished. You know, so very odd situation. And then some of the students, the ones that had actually made it to the craft out in the park, were brought in and interrogated, told by their headmaster that they're never to speak of this again. You didn't see any UFOs. So they were pretty much shut down, and people weren't allowed to really talk about it. The teachers weren't allowed to talk about it. Two guys in dark-coloured suits had turned up and spoken to the students, some of the students as well. So there's, like you said before, Kate, there's an underlying thing here where they always seem to know where to go at the right time. And I don't know how that happens, but that seems to happen.
Yeah, that's what makes you suspect that there is an international government that just keeps watch on these things. And just, I mean, these forces, no matter where it happens in the world, I mean, look out in Pennsylvania. I mean, that little thing comes down in the middle of nowhere and bam, these forces come out, take it away, it's gone. You know, it's Stan Gordon has been investigating that for literally decades and getting nowhere. So they really cover their tracks very well, too. I mean, which makes you feel that there really is no connection to any government here. But I don't know. You know, it's sort of a big mystery, everything about it. That's for sure.
They send their own set of rules, don't they?
Uh-huh. And I don't think we're ever going to find out what those particular... or at least not... We're not going to pleasantly find out about them anyway.
No, but, that's right.
But I'll tell you, we have 2012, as I'm sure you're quite aware. There's been some pretty nasty predictions for that this upcoming year as well. I don't know. What are your thoughts? Any interest down there or anything about disclosure or worldwide catastrophes or maybe some good things? Is there any good news out there anywhere?
Kate, I can tell you that we may live in very different parts of the world, but it's no different here. Everybody's aware of what's going on. We know about the Mayan calendar. You know, we cop just as much of that information as you guys do. People down here are very active. There's a Facebook group down here that actually works out in New Zealand, and they connect with us a fair bit as well. They get right into this sort of thing. So there's a lot of discussion going on as far as 2012 goes, whether the Mayan calendar is actually going to come through and show us exactly what's going to happen. I don't know. But the interesting thing is I just saw the other day that... a Japanese princess whose name escapes me has now gone. You probably saw that, Kate?
Yeah, that was phenomenal.
Yeah, that blew me away a bit. I thought, well, if you got a Japanese princess saying these sorts of things, it's a little bit like the Queen getting up there and having a go.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, this is, that's pretty far up in the government, I'd say. Yeah, that was interesting. Well, I will say, I hope the Mayans were wrong. And that's for certain. You know, but I'll tell you, Australia always reminds me, back in the 50s, there was a movie, On the Beach, with Gregory Peck, an old actor. And it was sort of the end of the world down there in Australia. And I hope that's not the case this time.
10 minutes from where I live, Kate.
All right. Well, I'll tell you, unfortunately, we've already come to the end of this hour. I'd like to speak to you for another hour or so, Andrew. Thank you so much for getting up this early in the morning to be here. And again, just for our audience, would you like to go over how to get in touch with the Victorian UFO Action Group and UFO Nauts?
Yeah, sure. You can contact us on our website, which is www.vufoa.com. So it's nice and simple, straightforward. And you can actually get to, once you go there, you can get to links to our UFONAUT Australia program that we have on YouTube. Or you can look me up on YouTube and just go to the channel known as Arnsman. So that's ARNZMAN. And if you search that channel, you will find us there as well. We've got about 9 episodes there, plus some other small snippets that we've added on into the show as well. So,
that's
yeah,
great.
Our website. Come visit us. We've got over 60 pages on the website. Lots of information there for you to see. Some of it overseas, but predominantly Australian. So if you're interested in Australian things, have a look there for us.
Okay, great. Thanks again. Thank you out there for listening. Always great to hear from you. Thanks to our sponsors, of course, Bill and Dave. Have a wonderful weekend. Stay tuned. Next week we'll have Aaron Kaplan. And until then, remember, keep your eye on the sky. See ya.